Chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita. Don't fall asleep yet. Chapter 13 of Bhagavad Gita is it's the first of the final set of six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Six, this young boy in the red jacket. Six plus six plus six equals 18. Very good. There's 18 chapters in Bhagavad Gita, and they're grouped in six plus six plus six. And 13 is the beginning of the final six. 1 through 6 is the first six. 7 through 12 is the middle six. And 13 begins the final. That's a little bit about the structure. Now, our acharyas explain that the divisions go as follows. Bhakti is in the middle. Of course, bhakti is throughout the whole of Bhagavad Gita, but the beginning part of Bhagavad Gita, the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, speaks a lot about detached work or karma and how to live your life in the world where you're doing activities without attachment to the fruits of those activities. The shy one. Kind of. So, over here, over here, karma. Karma yoga. To do karma yoga properly, fundamentally, there has to be an understanding of the soul, distinct from the covering of the soul. So it in Bhagavad Gita, but emphasizing the path of knowledge, or Gyan Yoga. And then right in the middle is that which supports the beginning and the end, and that's Bhakti. That's a little bit about the structure. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam, we're accustomed to say, and it's true, Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. You heard that before? Bhagavatam is the graduate study. The Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate study. So we're focusing on the undergraduate study part. In the Bhagavatam, there's a nice verse amongst 18,000 nice verses. One verse in Canto 1, Chapter 2 says, say it slowly, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam. Vairagya means detachment. Detachment, jnanam cha, knowledge also, ahaitukam, arises. So in the middle is bhakti, and on this side is detachment and knowledge on the other side. But what's supporting both knowledge and detachment and from the fruits of work is bhakti. Okay, so now here comes an easy one. Three things. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a very simple comparison why bhakti is in the middle. So, with you, three things. He gives three examples. If you have something very valuable in your family, heirlooms that are passed on from generation to generation, they're very valuable. Where do you keep them? A, you put them at your front door. B, you put them in your backyard. C, you put them right in the middle of the house for safekeeping. Similarly, bhakti is in the middle, and there's the front and there's the back side of Bhagavad Gita. Second example, supposing there's a parade or a procession, And there's a VIP, important person. And the VIP goes at the front, at the back, or in the middle of the parade. Goes in the middle. Here's a practical example. Some years ago, maybe 40 years ago, there was the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. And the governor of UP, Uttar Pradesh, was invited to attend. He agreed. So before he came, the police were all over the place. They were the first. And then there was the procession where the governor of UP came from Delhi to Vrindavan. And then the police were in the front. The governor was in the middle. And his, ministers and other VIPs there in the back, riding these little white ambassador cars. It was cute. So he's in the middle, because that's what you put the VIP in the middle. Similarly, bhakti is in the middle. And then another nice example, the third example, is when you build a house. What's the most important part of the house? It's the foundation. There's other parts of the house that are important. There's doors, and there's windows, and there's stairs, and there's walls, and there's other things. But the important part is the foundation. So the foundation of Bhagavad Gita is right in the middle. As I say, an A-frame house. You know what an A-frame house is? Our younger generation, it's like this, and runs across and runs over to the other side, and it's everything hangs on that A-frame. Traditional A-frame house. So it's that structure that's resting on the foundation, that's the most important part. It's got to be sturdy. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, similarly, bhakti is in the middle. Okay. Now, with that structure, everything's okay. The little one wants to go somewhere. More than wants to go somewhere. He wants somebody to go with her. Okay, so focus, everybody. If bhakti is in the middle and you're Vyasadev, Vyasadev wants to have these divisions. So in each of the three divisions, something is very important. It has to be established, and has to be established, and has to be established again. And the thing that has to be established and established again and again is Sankhya. Sankhya literally means count. Or the application of Sankhya is, here's categories of matter, here's categories of spirit, and we belong to the category of spirit. Sankhya. So when Krishna begins his instructions, the first part of Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, in this first six chapters, comes in chapter 2. What's the first topic that Krishna speaks about? Answer, Sankhya. What does Sankhya mean? Analysis of matter and spirit. When he analyzes matter and spirit, those of you that like to read Bhagavad Gita, you'll know it's 2:39. Krishna says, thus far I've described Sankhya. Now I'm going to describe Buddhi. So Sankhya comes first. And there he just has two categories. What are the two categories? The soul and matter. Doesn't make divisions of matter, just soul and matter. And the soul has these characteristics and matter has those characteristics, and they're different. And we belong to the category of spirit. Then it continues, because you can have detached work. You have to know that you're a spirit. You're not matter. End of the first six chapters. Now comes the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. The middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, bhakti. So in chapter 7, which is the first part of the middle six, the very first subject that Krishna speaks about is Sankhya. He's going to speak about, he says, he's going to explain bhakti, and the first thing he talks about is Sankhya. Only instead of two, it becomes eight. What are the eight? Five separated material energies, earth, water, fire, air, ether, makes five. And then three. How much is three plus five? Eight. Very good. So the three are mind, intelligence, false ego. Three plus five is eight. There's eight separated. Bina, prakriti, ashtada. Ashta means eight. Bina, prakriti, separated energies, eight in number. Then aside from those, there is spirit. Para, prakriti. So there's Sankhya. It's a short Sankhya section, very short. But that begins the middle six chapters. And chapter 13, which is the subject I wanted to speak about for this evening, guess where it starts? You guessed it, Sankhya. Only it's more expanded. Instead of saying two, or instead of saying eight, it becomes 24. So some of you know what those 24 are. There's five and five and five. How much is three times five? Three times five is 15. And then we add one more. So the five and five and five are the same five that already mentioned. That's earth, water, fire, air, ether. That's five. And then the knowledge-acquiring senses and the working senses, five and five plus five is 15. And then one more makes 16. That's the mind, because the mind is the center of the senses. So we have 16. And then we have two more. That's intelligence and false ego. So 16 plus 2 is 18, right? Right. So what are the other ones? Besides the senses, there are sense objects. How many sense objects are there? There are five senses, so there's five sense objects. 18 plus 5. 18 plus 5 equals 23. He's good at math. 23. So we're almost there. There's 24. And then the 24th element, there's different lists. But one is, I'm going to take you to the Srimad Bhagavatam in a moment, the graduate study. And sometimes the list in, so the section in the Srimad Bhagavatam that discusses Sankhya, who's the main incarnation of Krishna that taught Sankhya philosophy? His name is? Just somebody raise your hand. Don't blurt it out. Who knows what his name is? Starts with a K. Any of our young devotees know? You know? Kapila Dev. Good. Kapila. So in Kapila Dev, it's chapter 26, he's teaching Sankhya. Now let's back up. If you start with Sankhya, does it stop there? No. What's the purpose of Sankhya? Not besides there's matter and spirit. It's to connect with the Supreme Spirit. When done properly, when Sankhya is done properly, it leads to understanding the Supreme Spirit. And then the relationship between the individual spirit or the jiva and the Supreme Spirit and the activities in that relationship and then the fruit of those activities. Fruit of those activities is loving relationship with the Supreme. I'll say it again. The purpose of Sankhya is to bring one to bhakti. the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to bring one to bhakti. So there's this long section in chapter 13 that's about Sankhya, but it's meant to lead one to bhakti. And it does, if done properly. So the same thing with Kapila Dev. He's well known, repeated over and over and over. He's the propounder or the teacher of Sankhya. But he doesn't just teach Sankhya. He teaches devotional service. He's an incarnation. So from Sankhya, it goes to meditation, because in the age where Kapila Dev appeared, it was the Satya Yuga, and meditation is the process for Satya Yuga. But meditation on what? Meditation on the Supreme Spirit of Vishnu. And what's the fruit of meditation upon Vishnu? It's bhakti. Yes? Yes? Just like Dhruva. What did Dhruva do? He did meditation. And what ended up? He became a devotee. Because it wasn't just meditation and be passive. He ended up becoming a pure devotee. A perfect devotee. So I'll say it again. Sankhya, done properly, leads to understanding who you are. You're in the category of spirit. Then by meditating on spirit, understanding more about the Supreme Spirit, understanding more about the Supreme Spirit leads to devotional service. Of course, it requires devotee association, but Kapila is certainly teaching how to get to devotional service. He's, you know, the giver of bhakti to those who hear his teachings on Sankhya. Okay, so I'm not going to read from the verse or purport, but it's this is Canto 3, Chapter 26, and Krishna teaches the same thing to Uddhava in the 11th canto. In the 11th canto, it's a very nice, very long, very elaborate section. Just like Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Krishna speaks to Uddhava. Only instead of called Bhagavad Gita, it's called Uddhava Gita. And here's a question that Uddhava asks Krishna in Uddhava Gita. I hope I can find it. Yeah. Uddhava inquired, "My dear Lord," this is Canto 11, Chapter 22, if you want to look it up later. "Oh, Master of the Universe, how many different elements of creation have been enumerated by the great sages?" Same question, Sankhya question. "I have heard you personally describe a total of 28. It just grew by 4, from 24 to 28. Because he spoke 24 in Bhagavad Gita. No, he spoke to Uddhava, 28. And he lists them. Ishvara. Now, this list of 28 includes spirit. So Ishvara and the Jiva, that's included in the 28. So you take those away, you get 26. Mahatattva, that's certainly matter. False ego, 5 gross elements, 10 senses, mind, 5 subtle objects of perception, and then another one is the 3 modes of nature. So 3 modes of nature is just an add-on. It's part of Prakriti, but it's not on the 24 list that's in Bhagavad Gita. But some authorities say there are 26 elements, while others say 25, or else 7, 9, 6, 4, and 11. And even others say that there are 17, 16, and 13. What did each of these sages have in mind when he calculated the creative elements in such different ways? kindly explain this to me. And Krishna's answer is they're all right. They're just different ways of looking at the same thing. The translation of Krishna's answer: because all material elements are present everywhere, it is reasonable that different learned brahmanas have analyzed them in different ways. All such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, his spiritual potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. So there's detail in the BBT purport. So what am I went through this for a reason, and the reason is when you hear sometimes this and sometimes that and sometimes another thing, don't get bewildered. Try not to get bewildered, because there are different ways of looking at the same thing. And Krishna's confirming there are different ways of looking at the same thing. Now, a speculator looking at the same thing and a pure devotee looking at the same thing is not the same thing. But authorized persons may have a different way of analyzing, and it's quite okay. So get comfortable when you're hearing from an authoritative source like Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, and there's different numbers or there's different terminology. Okay, so that's like an introduction to chapter 13. Now we're going to go into chapter 13. The structure of chapter 13, since it comes right after chapter 12, and what's the title of the chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita? You know what the name? Devotional service. That's the title of chapter 12. So the middle six culminates in explaining with some detail devotional service. That's the title of chapter 12. In verse 7 of chapter 12, Krishna has said, he made a promise to his devotees that he is going to give knowledge of how his devotees can go beyond the influence of Prakriti. So now he's going to fulfill that promise in chapter 13. How he's going to fulfill that promise is very simple. He's going to have Arjuna ask a leading question that will encourage Krishna, or Krishna will provide the response that fulfills this promise in chapter 12. So the first part, the very first verse of chapter 13 is Arjuna asks a Sankhya question. The Sankhya question is three pairs of two. What's three times two? Six. So three pairs of two. Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha means enjoyer, and Prakriti means enjoyed. Gyanam and Gayam, knowledge and the object of knowledge. And the field of activity, Kshetra, and the knower of the field of activity, Kshetragya. So consider matter and spirit. Different ways of looking at matter and spirit. Could you explain these six? And Krishna says, sure, I'll explain these six. And the beginning part is he's going to deal with the field of activities, Kshetra, which is the body. And then after explaining what the parts of the body are, because it's different elements, then he says, aside from the field of activities, there's the knower of the field. And one who knows the field of one who knows the field of activities is the knower of the field of activities. That's a soul. And then he says something very interesting. He said, aside from one who knows a particular field of activities, there's another entity that knows all fields of all activities. This I like Prabhupada's statement. In this verse, with one word, cha means and, Krishna has defeated Mayavad philosophy. Because Mayavad philosophy says it's all one, and Krishna says cha. There's the knower of the field, and there's one who knows all fields of all activities, that super soul. So aside from the individual soul, there's one supreme soul that knows all fields of all activities. So that's Kshetra and Kshetragya. That's very quick. So that's two out of the six. Then comes knowledge. And this is a very interesting one. Knowledge, when you read the verse for what's the items of knowledge, there's 19 that are listed, and there's qualities. So how do the two match up, knowledge and qualities? And the answer is, well, one who actually has knowledge, not just information, but one has knowledge, they have qualities. And symptoms of one who has knowledge is qualities, or qualities are symptoms of one who has knowledge. Very simple. And then what's the object of knowledge? Well, the object of knowledge is the soul, or the supreme soul, or the relationship between the soul and the supreme soul. But so knowledge is the character or quality. And it's a nice list. There are qualities by which one who is a sadhu is to be known, or one who is a spiritually realized person. It's one who is experiencing spirit. They're known by certain qualities. It's a list of 19. I'll just drill down on it a little bit because it's a nice purport. It's a long purport. Of those 19, is there one that's most important? The answer is yes. In fact, there's one from which all the others come. Swarup Lakshana, the primary characteristic. Lakshana means characteristic. That primary one, it's really nice, is bhakti. Mayi Chananya Yogena Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. Avyabhicharini means undivided. Undivided devotion is the root. And from the root comes the tree. Knowledge and with the exhibition of good qualities. And to get that undivided devotion to Krishna, first paragraph Prabhupada explains it's acharya upasana. We all know the word acharya, one who teaches by example. And upasana means to worship. So there we go. Those two out of the 19 are the source, the foundation of the other 17. Bhakti is the foundation. Bhakti is the foundation, like the foundation of a house and the main frame of the house and the A-frame house. And then there's the doors and the windows and the walls and the rest of the thing. So that's knowledge. And then the object of knowledge, it's Krishna, the soul and Krishna, matter and spirit. So these qualities, they may be exhibited by somebody that doesn't have love of God or a deep sense of bhakti. But if they exhibit those qualities, they're the reflection of the real thing. It means now you see it, now you don't. They're temporary. I'll do that again. This is chapter 13. a younger generation people, I hope you don't mind, we're just because we're looking at how does this work? How does Bhagavad Gita, how does this piece fit together with that piece? You get the puzzle all figured out. Chapter 15 speaks about the reflection of a tree in water. You familiar with that one? Here's a tree. Here's a lake or a pond or a river or a body of water. And the tree has the branches growing up and the trunk going down. But the reflection shows just the opposite. The roots are growing up and the branches are growing down. In this way, the world that in which we live is described and compared to a reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, there's real knowledge. In this world, there's the reflection of real knowledge. So there may be the appearance of something, but wait a while. Time passes and that something disappears. The wind moves the surface of the water and the branches went away in the reflection. But that from which the reflection comes doesn't go away. In other words, real knowledge doesn't go away. Why doesn't it go away? Because it's rooted in this that which is eternal. It's of the eternal realm. So real knowledge it's not flickering. Not now you see it, now you don't. So here's somebody that's really nice, and all of a sudden they got nasty and angry and went into a rage. What happened? It wasn't a real quality. Some wind came and made some waves in the reflection. It just got changed. But that doesn't happen in the spiritual realm. So real knowledge is of the nature of that which is eternal and fixed. And therefore, it's these qualities, it's in the realm of matter, Gyanam and Gayam, that there's the object of knowledge. The object of anything that's a nice quality is meant to help you make the connection with transcendence or connection with the supreme or a connection with the eternal, the supreme eternal. Know who you are and stay there. Don't waver. Then, I'm just going to move along. This is just chapter 13. There's Purusha and Prakriti. You have a Bhagavad Gita in your house? Okay, have a copy. You can look up verses 20, 21, and 22 of chapter 13. So in Purusha and Prakriti, because that's the final two, Prakriti means material nature, and Purusha means one who's the enjoyer of material nature. And then the interaction between the two, Purusha and Prakriti. So it's a nice verse. Purusha Prakriti Sto Hei. Prakriti Sta. Sta means situated in. Prakriti Sta. Purusha Prakriti Stohi, the living entity that's situated in Prakriti. Bhunkte means tries to enjoy. Bhunkte Prakriti Jan Gunan. That's what living entities do in relation to Prakriti. Commonly, they try to become enjoyers to Prakriti. But then something happens when that interaction of Purusha and Prakriti happens. Sadasad Yoni Janmasu. Yoni means place of birth, just like the womb of a mother is known as Yoni. And from wombs of mothers comes birth. So the Yoni of happiness and distress or good and bad or the duality of this material world comes from the mother. And the mother is the Purusha living entity interacting with Prakriti in the mood of trying to be the enjoyer. So when living entity interacts with material nature, trying to be the enjoyer of material nature, you get good and bad. But that good and bad is in the category of Prakriti. It's temporary. It's the now you see it, now you don't good, now it's not good anymore, now it's bad, and that's the way of this world. Arjuna was asking, and Krishna is fulfilling his request. What are these six things? And the last of these six things is Purusha and Prakriti. Another nice verse, a very important verse. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakritir uchate. Hetu means cause. Hetu prakriti. Prakriti is the cause of all material causes and effects. We discussed this the other day in another context, in the Gita values topic. The Gita values topic was, do we really have choice? Remember that discussion, those of you that participated? Because look at this, and here it is in chapter 13 also. Material nature is the cause, the hetu, of all material causes and effects. And we're not material nature, we're a living entity. So do you really have a choice? Since material nature is the cause of all material causes and effects. So you're just going along for the ride. Just going along for the ride. You're sitting in a machine made of the material energy, and there's nothing you can do about the machine because it's being conducted by the laws of material nature. It's going along for the ride. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Whereas the living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyments of this world. Purusha, that's the living entity. Sukha, dukhanam. Sukha and dukkha, because of why? Bhoktritve, trying to be the enjoyer. So what happens if you're not trying to be the enjoyer? Then you stop existing? Or, you know, what happens? Well, if you're a devotee, you serve Krishna. You don't serve this enjoyment or avoiding that suffering. I mean, it's 0 degrees. It's cold. So we have a jacket. Or, you know, more than a jacket. Even indoors, you guys got a jacket on. Because it's cold. You're sitting by the door. Cold by the door, right? A little bit? A little bit? You got a nice sweater on. But you won't wear that nice sweater in the summer because... So we adjust to what's the circumstance that we find ourselves in. But the real happiness is not what the temperature is. On the way over here, I had a conversation with somebody in California that grew up in Illinois, near Chicago. But they're now living in California. So I said, by the way, it's 0 degrees Fahrenheit in Chicago. They said, oh, it's 65 degrees here in California. They didn't say, I'm glad I'm not Chicago. Yeah, I'll send some warmth your way. Okay. The Prakriti does this and Purusha does that. What does Prakriti do? It creates material causes and effects, and the living entity tries to be the enjoyer of Prakriti and thus creates happiness and distress. So what's the solution? The advocacy of Bhagavad Gita isn't just make it warmer when it's cold and make it colder when it's warm. The solution is end the cycle of birth and death. Connect, and how do you do that? Bhakti. When you have a proper understanding of Sankhya, the intelligent person, let's go back to chapter 2. in chapter 2, the first subject matter is Sankhya, and the very next subject matter is Buddhi. When you understand Sankhya properly, you want to do the intelligent thing. Buddhi yoga means acting with intelligence. And what's the intelligence once you know what Sankhya is? You connect with Krishna. You don't connect with the temporary. How many times has Prabhupada said that over and over again? Over and over again. Over and over again. And we're still attached to the temporary. Sad but true. The idea is not, I don't care. That's not that kind of detachment. It's perform duties without attachment. Because your existence this, from the soul platform is to be connected with the Supreme. So you act in relation to matter, prakriti, without trying to create happiness and avoid distress. I mean, you wear a jacket when it's cold. But the mission when it's cold or warm is to connect with Krishna. That's buddhi. Sankhya leads to buddhi, leads to bhakti. And that's how chapter 13 ends. A quick summary of how chapter 13 ends. Those who see the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the super soul, and who recognize the process of liberation, that's getting freed from the bondage of reactions from material nature, they attain the supreme goal. Those that have, so we're encouraged through Bhagavad Gita to basically understand what's what. Here we are, we're in the human form of life. How many different forms of life have we had before getting the human form of life? Who can say? A lot. I remember one lecture Prabhupada was very strong about. He said, just assume that you've been through 8 million different species of life before coming to this one. That's a lot. And now here you are with the human form. Now what are you going to do with it? And if you don't have proper guidance, you don't know where you're going. I was just listening today, Prabhupada, in a recording lecture saying, there was a gentleman, very aristocratic person, that was very ill, about to die. He asked a doctor, can you give me 3 more years of life? He said, I haven't finished my business. I've given some things to my sons to do, but I have to finish up my business. And he was very afraid. And Prabhupada's comment, because apparently they had some conversation, he had no idea where he was going. Besides attached to finishing up his business, what's next for this man? I have no idea. Fearful. A bright man, smart, accomplished. No idea. So if one stays, if a consciousness continues to be invested in the temporary, there's no liberation. It's just more and more the same. So it takes, a little light has to go on at some point through association of those who have wisdom to say, you know what? I want permanent happiness. And I want knowledge that will be fulfilling and satisfying. So how do you get there? So these things are described in chapter 13. Although it's rooted in Sankhya, it leads to bhakti. And, you know, it's a very interesting chapter. For those that are a little bit analytical and not over analytical, but a little bit analytical, it's a very interesting chapter. And it goes in sequence from chapter 2, to chapter 7 to chapter 13. It's expanded. And then, you know, fasten your seatbelt because Bhagavatam takes you further. But it's all leading, it's just the cheetahs is gets well situated in devotional service to Krishna and have a clear idea of what's what as you're doing that. Not just a dreamy, but, you know, a very practical idea of what's what. We can have utopian or imaginary ideas of what it's like to go back to Godhead or, you know, or love of God. What's that? Sounds nice. But then you start to fill in the picture, become familiar with the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and then Srimad Bhagavatam. It's wonderful. So there's chapter 13, summary. And we lost a couple of our younger generation boys, but not surprised. But you made it. So any discussion? Microphone's on strike. Okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, can you kindly elaborate how Acharya Upasana drives the other 16 qualities?
It leads, Acharya Upasana leads to undivided devotional service. And the undivided devotional service leads to the others. Say it the other way. Without connection with Acharya, one isn't going to get devotional service. And Acharya Upasana leads to undivided devotional service. And when undivided devotional service is there, other qualities manifest, or other items of knowledge manifest.
So sometimes we tend to cultivate the other qualities.
No problem. But they won't effectively manifest in a sustainable fashion without one and two. They'll come and they'll go. Asat. Impermanent, insubstantial, the reflection. Okay. Keep talking. They'll move the dials.
I was just thinking, like, the one who is fortunate to have Acharya, they have this benefit. The one who doesn't, how they reach devotion.
Such a person that doesn't have needs the mercy of one who has. And without the mercy of one who has, they won't have. And they'll be in la-la land for their life. And, you know, do the best they can or whatever they're going to do until the opportunity comes. Therefore, we're very enthusiastic to extend the message of bhakti to others in so many ways. And that's our life. I mean, we receive, that's part of our life, and to give what we've received, that's the other part of our life. Anyone else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So, Sankhya and Bhakti, these are the two things. So pre-Kanishtha Adhikari, how they can proceed? First, to understand the Sankhya or Bhakti, what would be the
What do you think? There is a natural sequence which unfolds. It's not that, okay, you have to go, you know, you have to go to first grade before you can get to second grade, and go to second grade before you, so it's not quite like that, not a linear thing. However, a starting point is to understand that you are spirit soul. A starting point. And supposing you get a notional idea, but you're not realized fully yet. So now you can't go to bhakti. You go to bhakti. And through bhakti, then you'll gradually come to realize more and gradually. So it's not a linear method. There is an unfolding. And hearing from the right source, even about Sankhya, is itself bhakti. Because it leads to bhakti. The seed is there from the right source.
Vision,
I could speak right into the microphone.
What is a sense object?
There's the subtle and there's the gross. Some of you are attending either in person or remotely. Some of you aren't. Canto 2, Chapter 10, Morning Bhagavatam class. And there's the subtle before the gross is manifest. So there's both subtle and gross. So what that means is, there's the subtle sense object before there's the gross sense objects. You know, it's like, let's just say, an electronic signal, because that's something that it modern science and modern life deals with. Supposing, as we're sitting here right now, there's all kinds of signals passing through. We just don't have the receiver for them. There's radio, there's television, there's this, there's that. And each of them has form. And if you have, a TV, you can show the form, but you don't even see anything because it's just a signal. There's the subtle. And then there's the grosser manifestation of that subtle. And that's sense objects. And then you see the sense object and you think, oh, that's nice. Or you can feel hungry, or you can feel lusty, or you can feel angry, or you can feel, whatever you feel. There's emotion that's connected with the sense object. And it's just an image on the screen, which is just a subtle thing being passed through the air by people that know how to do that. There's subtle and there's gross sense objects.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
It's great when it works, isn't it?
May I ask something from the morning discussion, Guru Maharaj? We were discussing about this faith, how both for scientific or material knowledge as well as for the Shastra, we need that element of faith to start. So I was just contemplating on that. Of course, the scientists or modern people say, when we believe in the spirituality or religion, they say it's just a blind faith. How can you prove? Or you were describing that different proofs, and they may still say, oh, but that doesn't really prove. So on the contrary, we need that element of faith even for our school, college, education, or things to go through. For a person who's not so much inclined to hear about this, how do we bring them to understand this aspect and thus slowly bring them to, you know, at least be open to hear about the spirituality.
Prasadam? Things that they can relate to? Kirtan? Those accept those methods of purification that are acceptable to their mind and senses, that's the beginning. You know, and try as far as possible to make that the sound vibration that you're sharing with them relatable. And with faith that it's going to have an impact, however long it may take. We don't water down purity to make it acceptable, but you package the purity in such a way that it's digestible in little bits, little chewable pieces. A real nice example is this, because I've been doing it, and Monday morning, while you're doing your, you know, the retreat over at the temple, I'm going to be speaking to the Chinese devotees and explaining about how light of the Bhagavat was Prabhupada's bridge preaching. So what he did was, in principle, something that they can relate to. Scenes of nature. And then I'm interested because it's something I can relate to. And then take that which they can relate to and poetically share lessons of life that are learned from scenes of nature. Very palatable. So he didn't water down transcendence. He just framed it in such a way that it's palatable, and digestible, and comprehensible. And then as he went on, it just became, you know, more light went on and became very personal, and Supreme Personality of Godhead and Krishna, you know, the gopis and all the whole thing. But, you know, little by little, that's not where it started. And if nothing else, prasadam. I know some devotees that they've gotten people in the workplace addicted to prasadam. Now with pandemic, then a lot has changed. But, you know, once a week, they would bring something, you know, really yummy. And so their co-workers were like, "What do you got today? This is Wednesday. Wednesday's our surprise day. What is it? Oh, this is good." And then, you know, how do you, the recipe, you know, then it comes your way of life and comes the rest, the other parts of the message. No, we don't use those things. Why not? Because of the modes of nature, we offer only, so, you know, little by little, by titrating little by little, then some people go, "Oh, that's nice." And then they go on to something else. But, you know, slowly, slowly, it's a spiritual influence upon persons that are covered. Slowly, slowly. And there's no loss. Any gain is permanent. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.